Hello, and welcome back to the Blitzscaling Venture Deals podcast. I am Chris Yeh, joined by my partner, Scott Johnson of Blitzscaling Ventures. And as you know, Scott, we every month gather together to look over what's happened in the venture landscape and talk about some of the blitzscalable venture deals that we might have found. This time, we're talking about deals that were reported in July of 2023. So what did things look like in July?
Well, as you recall from our last episode, we were hopeful that things were getting to a higher volume. And in May, there were 62 total deals. In June, there were 77. April, there were 47. Felt like a trend. And July, there were 49. Now, there are some doldrums in the venture world, but with all the momentum from AI and just the energy that you feel out in the startup community, I did not expect to have the second lowest volume of reported deals of the year. April was 47. So really, it's a low bar, or a low point, I should say. And the culprit is Series A, Series B, Series C, all single digits, 8 Series A, 9 Series B, 5 Series C. Now, there's this category called other, where they don't really know the series. And so some of them might have gone in there. But overall, a low volume month. And we can attribute it to sloth in the VC world, or we can attribute it to in general, things are still at a slower pace. I can't parse that out for you, but it does come as a surprise. The other thing is the General Catalyst was the most active VC. It's been Andreessen almost every single month. So in May, it was Accel. And in July, General Catalyst edged them out. So it was that's sort of a new thing. And other than that, the metrics are as I reported.
Got it. And I think the implication that you're saying is that we saw slowdowns at Series A, B, C, and beyond. You're saying then we didn't see that kind of slowdown at the seed stage.
Yeah, and that's where you'd expect a lot of the AI deals to fall, right? So a lot of excitement around AI. Entrepreneurs say, I'm going to start this, I'm going to start that. I see how to use this tool to solve this particular problem in a terrific way. So I'm going to start a company and raise some seed money. And I expect that's why the seed economy is more robust than the other areas.
And I can tell you, I was just at a large AI-themed meetup yesterday, and then I did a fireside chat, mainly about AI, and there is massive excitement about that, and the quality of entrepreneurs is pretty high. These folks, as you have discussed before, coming from pedigreed backgrounds, working at big companies, having past experience, and people feel like this is a great time to start a company in the field of AI, so it's an exciting time.
Well, it's a wonderful confluence of events where you have all of the platform companies shedding employees and AI suddenly becoming real. So what a better mix for creating really high quality startup teams than that?
Well, it's like I often describe, it's the supernova effect. The supernova, in this case, the big FANG tech companies, explode to the extent that you're sending out these new materials, and those new materials are what form everything other than hydrogen and helium in the universe. So all those experienced people being shoved out the door are almost immediately getting in line and collecting their checks and starting their companies.
Yeah, it's just wonderful to see that cycle play out in such a positive way. So we're optimistic despite the fact that the deal count is down. Certainly the prospects for the future with a seed deal count staying robust is good.
Now, what's interesting about the deals we're going to talk about next, because there are two deals that we're going to discuss. Again, low volume month, so relatively low volume of deals, is that both companies use AI, but neither is an AI company.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that a lot where, you know, there's some companies that kind of use blockchain, but you don't think of them as a blockchain company. It just happened to be the best technology to do part of what they do. And it helps create a great customer experience, but it isn't the thing that defines them. So that's something we're going to see a ton of.
Awesome. Well, our first company is Spline. And the best way to describe Spline, at least as far as I can tell, is 3D Figma. I think that basically covers it.
Yeah, it's a seed deal. They raised a decent seed round, $15 million. The lead is Gradient Ventures, but it made our list because we have Y Combinator in here. We have First Round Capital in here. And those are good indicators of deals that really stand out. So they're believe it or not, in Delaware. And if you want to check them out, they're at spline.design, which I think that's cool that their URL rhymes. You don't get that very often.
Yeah, and this is a 3D design tool, so you can work in 3D just in your web browser. They do have desktop programs as well, because, you know, why not have extra power? And it is a platform for creating and sharing 3D objects. So because it's a platform, that means there are network effects. It means that it's the familiar interface. It's the place where you can go to get the most pre-built objects. It's the place where there's the greatest community. So there's some good network effects involved. It doesn't rise to the highest possible level of something like a pure social network or a pure marketplace, but we gave it a 9 out of 10. We like to be generous and see what comes out the other side. On the viral growth or distribution, we gave this one a high mark here as well, because the beauty of having a platform that's very easy for people to come in and view is that people, without even creating a Spline account, can view your 3D objects. So you can share your portfolio, you can spread it widely, and people will just come over the internet and check it out. So because of that, we think there's going to be a lot of virality as people share their
Spline. Yeah, you check it out and say, how did they do that? And, oh, they used Spline. And, oh, this is cool. You just sort of type in some text and it helps you create your 3D thing. And that's, I think, you know, a pretty unique, creating stuff in 3D in the past without being able to just describe it in text has been a horror show. It takes forever. And so this is a big step forward, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is illustrative. Just last night, I saw a startup that an architect had built, I think it was called blueprints.ai, where you could create blueprints by offering descriptions. So you could say, I want you to design me a 4-bedroom house with an open concept kitchen. And then it pops up something. You're like, I would like the living room to be bigger. I would like the bathroom to be smaller, and so on and so forth. Then it would change the blueprints on the spot. It was amazing.
I love that. Anybody who's used CAD would love to have been able to do that. I've tried to struggle with some of these CAD tools, and they are so arcane. And you just wish you could speak to the thing. It's because you can't. You just make the living room bigger. That's brilliant.
Well, I'm connected to the entrepreneur, so we can definitely talk. I'm sure he'd be interested in chatting more with us. But I digress. We're not talking about blueprints. We're talking about Spline. And again, you can tell just from the excitement, the 3D side has historically been a smaller market, but it's going to get much bigger if you can do AI-assisted creation. So it doesn't have to be thinking in three dimensions, a la Captain Kirk versus Khan in The Wrath of Khan. So I think that viral growth and distribution is good. We're giving it a 9. Product market fit, we gave it an 8, because the product actually, if you check it out, looks pretty good. Still need to test out the AI authoring tools, but 8 out of 10 is very good for a company at that stage. Market size, we are going to penalize them a little bit, because 3D is still harder, even with AI assistance. And so instead of a 10 out of 10, we're giving it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, you think of design tools, like that's a huge market, right? There's tons of designing going on all the time, but most of it's 2D. So when you get to 3D design, you get into product design, you get into gaming, and potentially down the road, metaverse. But except for that, there's just not a lot of 3D going on. So it is a smaller market, so we have to take it down a little bit.
But even with all that, the final score, after we give it 10s for gross margin and scalability, because this is pure software, which is brilliant, it's 81, which is Blitz scalable.
Yeah, anything over 80, we don't give it a B. We give it a Blitz scalability score. It is something that they should think about, making sure that they dominate this market, and then they will print money forever, as Chris puts it.
Well, you know, we could say that if you get over 80, you get a B for Blitz scalable, and if you get over a 90, you get an A for absolutely Blitz scalable.
Yep, I never thought of it that way, but that is a good addition. I think we can adopt that. But the next company, let's see. So that's Spline, and it's an AI company. It's a seed stage deal. It's everything that sort of encapsulates this moment in time. But now we're going to talk about a company that is a little more sort of mainstream, and it does use some AI tools to make it better and differentiated, but it's in good old healthcare.
Yes. So the company's name is Eureka Health, and the idea is that it creates structured communities where people with various chronic conditions can get together and figure out what kind of treatments actually work. And so there's a couple of elements to it. You have people reporting what their treatments are and what their results have been. But part of it is, as people are signing up for these accounts, they're talking about themselves and their background and their health markers and everything like that. And when you have a full account, as you're going through and looking at other people's reported symptoms or results, it will show you a similarity score and say, hey, how similar is this person to me? How much should I be focused on this as a possible example of how I will experience it? So it's much more structured than the Reddit or Facebook or other sort of general purpose patient communities.
Yeah, anybody's been searching for any help on the internet for health stuff knows what a morass of crap it can be. And the nice thing about this one is they do use AI to look at all of the content. So the AI keeps up with what's new in all of these diseases and helps summarize it and helps inform your search when you're searching and can even tailor it to you a little bit if you know you have some sort of unique thing you're looking for. So we've seen these before, right? We've seen there are scaled up communities of people with similar diseases or conditions, and that's useful. It's helpful. A lot of them are sponsored by the nonprofits that are trying to promote better cures for these diseases. But it's nice to see that AI is being deployed here to help simplify that search and make sense of the morass of junk that's out there and help you figure out what's important for you.
Well, you know, let's use a personal example, because recently you had some back issues and you were really low. I mean, you were feeling constant pain. You were, mildly depressed because you were contemplating a life where you couldn't live the active lifestyle that you normally live. And it was really tough for you. What did you do and how did you find the information? How would something like Eureka Health have helped you?
So that was an interesting journey. I went on immediately to GPT-4 and said, all right, here are my symptoms. And I typed them all in and it said, all right, you have bursitis. Because I have pain in my leg. You talked about my back, but it jumped to the punchline. I had a disc bulging in my back and just poking a nerve. And that was reflective pain down in my leg. So I went to GPT-4. I said, what could this be? And it said, you know, like about 60% chance that's bursitis. There's also, you could possibly have a stress fracture in your thigh. It didn't mention what I ultimately was the problem. So it's interesting that I got bad advice from GPT-4, similarly bad advice from my primary care person. And so they treated me for bursitis, and you know, it takes a long time. You have to do these certain exercises. Eventually it goes away. And I was bummed about that.
Then it and none of it helped. Worse.
None of it helped, of course, because nothing was wrong with my leg. It was just sort of a nerve being poked in my back. So eventually it became so bad that I was essentially crippled. I couldn't get out of bed and I couldn't move. So I called the ambulance. I went to the emergency room and they did an MRI of my back this time, because they started thinking, okay, this is not just a bursitis thing. There's something like seriously nervy going on here. And this, sure enough, they found the disc that was bulging into the nerve and said, that's the problem, and stuffed me with a huge spike of oral prednisone, which fixed me overnight. So I don't know, like it probably would have been good to have a community like this to help cut through some of the, like I would have, the problem is I wouldn't have gone to the disc, you know, ruptured disc community. I would have gone to the my leg hurts community and the bursitis community. But even in that community, a lot of people might have said, oh yeah, I thought I had bursitis and it turns out that was misdiagnosis and it turned out to be this other thing, and so you should definitely have an MRI of your lower lumbar spine. And that's actually what my chiropractor was saying all along, and she was right. So but I've had other things where you go and go through the medical community and they make certain recommendations, and then I go to my friend down the road who says, oh yeah, I had that, and then I tried this and that worked for me because of this, and then I try it and that works, and everything that the mainstream medicine people thought would be great didn't work. So to me, there is useful anecdotal evidence out, experience out there that is very difficult to tap into. And if this helps that, and if it could use AI to sort through it and sift through it for you and really get you to the most interesting recent new things that you might not have otherwise found, because the internet, you know, when you search stuff, stuff that wins in search engines is usually pretty old. So this is this could be a big step forward in that.
Yeah. And I think that the other element of this, as far as Eureka Health goes, is that it works really well for conditions which are still, we're struggling to understand. It's no surprise that the single biggest community on Eureka Health is the long COVID community, where they're not getting a lot of good answers, and being able to sort of aggregate together the data into what I think the website described as anecdata is actually helpful. And yeah, gives people at least some sense of agency, some sense that they can do something about this thing that's affecting them.
Yeah, so it does bring up market size, though, and how many diseases really or conditions really fit that profile. And so it's probably quite a few, but not as many as some of the more established and well-understood diseases. But you know, anything medical is usually an enormous market, so
yeah,
it's hard to really knock it down.
Yeah, so let's go through and score this thing. So for Eureka Health, in terms of winner take most, it's a classic thing where you want to go where the most information is. I mean, all these years later, people still go to Yelp, and that's because Yelp established early leadership. And I think we looked at a company today that, in fact, Jeremy Stoppelman of Yelp had been an investor in, which, ironically enough. In terms of viral growth or distribution, you know, this is decent. It's not as good as something like Spline, where people are actively sharing it. But boy, those communities of people find each other. Yeah. And so that's just pretty strong. We're giving it an 8 out of 10. Product market fit, still early on. One of the things that is actually the biggest issue of fit is you have a cold start problem. And people have to want to join these communities and report what they're doing. And there's not as much of a single player mode. What we saw is that some pretty big communities that I think would be large, like type 2 diabetes or Parkinson's disease, had like single digit members. And so it's still early on, product market fit 7 so far. But then market size, as you mentioned, this is huge. Everyone needs something like this. Gross margin, you know, the business model is still a little to be determined. They don't have a model. They're not going to charge people for this. But I have to believe that if you have all this data and you have all these patients, it's valuable. And so you'll end up getting to a 10 out of 10 on margin, and then scalability is also quite good. So with all that,
Think about clinical trials, there's so many ways that having a community of people with a particular issue can be monetized and with permission. It's a real, I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. So all of that leads us to a final score of 82, which again is B for Blitz Scalable.
It is. I should talk about the round. It's $7 million, a seed round led by Kosla Ventures. And if you want to find them online, it's just what you think, eurekahealth.com. And they're out of Sacramento.
Yeah, that's the unusual part. It's pretty rare to see things out of the capital city of California. But, you know, Sacramento is only 90 minutes away from the Bay Area. And in addition to everything else, this is actually a 2 Wojcicki company. They have both Ann and Susan as investors.
A 2 Wojcicki company. Great. Anything else you want to talk about today, Chris? You know, it's been sort of a short discussion of companies, and there's a lot going on in the world. And so is there a particular item of interest that we should observe that we haven't observed yet?
I think that the main thing is just, you know, given that we saw a sudden reversal of the trend of increasing financings, August is going to be really interesting, because normally we would view it as summer doldrums. We would view it as being lower. We should probably, before we go to the next broadcast, go back and do some charting and seeing if there's any seasonality that we can pick out. It's always hard to pick that out relative to all the other factors, but you know, we really want to understand, is the market coming back or not? And I think that that will be an interesting data point.
Well, the stock market's done very well, at least for the super big platforms. They have come back very strongly. I think some of the less large cap companies, the mid caps, have not done that as well. So there's, you know, there's some evidence that the public markets are still trying to find their feet, even though the overall market's gotten gotten pretty good.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. We root for good news. We think that the world is a better place like that. And I think by the time we return, which will be a month from now, folks may have just gotten back from their holidays and be in the mood to learn a little bit more about Blitz Scalable Venture Deals.
Indeed. And we hope to see a little more activity, but August is usually not the biggest activity month of the year. So I don't expect a huge uptick.
Well, Scott, I know as always, you will return in about a month's time to join me in this exploration. I want to thank all the audience members for tuning in. As always, please do, if you have not already, subscribe, rate, and tell your friends about this podcast. I'm Chris Yeh. Look forward to speaking with you again soon.